some time ago when I was doing a story for the Tribune about political conventions, I searched around for an expert in political conventions and came upon John Mark Hansen, a political science professor at the University of Chicago, and we had such a delightful time talking. I thought, man, I got to write another story and use something about this guy. He is on now. Hey, John, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good. You're now going to be my go-to expert on anything. I was thinking of writing, well, I'm going to write something about the 100th anniversary of the so-called monkey trial, and I think, I don't know if I reached out to you, you reached out to me, but here we are once again. Explain to me, you have such a long title, and explain what this means, okay? I'm going to get the whole title. The Charles L. Hutchinson Distinguished Service Professor in Political Science in the College. Who was Charles Hutchinson?
Charles Hutchinson was one of the founders of the University of Chicago. He was the son of a guy who was named Hutch Hutchinson, he was known as Hutch Hutchinson. His name was Benjamin, I believe, who was one of the early traders on the Board of Trade. And Charles Hutchinson also became one of the founders of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Oh, and wow. I should know that.
A lot of the paintings, particularly the Impressionist paintings, are from his collection.
When did you get... You wrote a marvelous, I think, wonderful story for the University of Chicago magazine. This for the U of C magazine, this Evolution on Trial? Is that who you wrote it for? When did you... Did you do it as a hobby, or have you long been interested in that Evolution on Trial subject?
Well, I've been working for a number of years now on Chicago history, and particularly Southside history, and maybe even within that, particularly on Hyde Park and University of Chicago history. And a few years ago, I came across the fact that when John Scopes was finished with his trial in Tennessee, he actually came here as a graduate student in geology. So I began to look deeper into it and found all kinds of connections between the Scopes trial and the University of Chicago and Hyde Park.
Yeah, you sure did. I am so taken with this story, because I think, and don't you think, at this stage, when I was talking to someone said, what's going to be on your show today? I necessarily said, well, I'm going to be talking about the monkey trial. And they said, oh, I know about the monkey trial. People don't really know about the monkey trial. They know about the movie Inherit the Wind, and they think they know about the so-called monkey trial. This thing was absolutely fascinating. Ron Grossman has a piece in today's Chicago Tribune about one aspect of it, that it was covered by WGN Radio, one of the first nationally broadcast radio events. Most people, John Hansen, don't know the particulars, the depth, and the reasons behind this. And don't you think it's a sort of snap judgment, and what they remember is Spencer Tracy grilling Frederick March in the movie?
I think that's exactly what they remember.
Yeah.
And of course, that was a fictionalized version as well.
You've obviously seen the movie. That's a very fictionalized version, is it not?
It is. One thing that's fictionalized about it is that the actual examination that Darrow made of Brian took place on the lawn outside the courtroom, whereas in the movie it takes place in a courtroom.
Yep. What particularly fascinates you, one of the things, the trial was not about so much evolution. He was being tried for teaching evolution. Is that not right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yes, the statute was specifically a statute that forbade teaching any theory that contradicts the account of divine creation in Genesis.
Well, you know, and it goes to, I think, the sort of separation of church and state that has long bedeviled this country. It was also, as you point out, where can people get a hold of this this story of yours, this University of Chicago magazine story?
Yes, they have a website, and I believe anyone can get access to it.
Good. Just the name of the author is John Mark Hansen, and just look it up. It's fascinating. It's not long. It's not long, but it's a very, very, very intelligent thing that tells you a lot about the University of Chicago's, if not participation in the thing, at least the shadow of it, and the fact that poor Mr. Do you feel bad for Scopes?
Well, I feel bad for Scopes in the sense that he came to the university to get a PhD in geology and never got it. He was supported for his first 2 years in the program by donations that were raised by the scientist to help him out after the trial. And then after 2 years, his department chair applied for a fellowship to support the completion of his degree, and the president of the university that administered it wrote back and said, there's no way I'm going to consider your application. You can take your atheistic marbles and play elsewhere, he said.
Which is incredible. Atheistic marbles and play elsewhere. Do you know much more about him? There's a bit in your level of he seems to have been, I hate this phrase, but sort of railroaded into the courthouse. But also, there's a shadow of a kind of public relations coup orchestrated by some of the people in the town, in Dayton, who wanted people to come to Dayton. Isn't that basic? That's a huge reason that it was held there, yes?
Yes, yes. So what happened in Dayton was that the Chattanooga paper, Dayton's about 40 miles from Chattanooga, the Chattanooga paper had an ad in it that had been placed by the American Civil Liberties Union, taking note of the new law that had been passed against teaching evolution in Tennessee and saying that if there's any high school teacher who would like to test the law, we'll support the defense.
Mm.
And so these guys were sitting around the Cracker Barrel, basically, in Dayton, talking and saying, hey, you know, we should have that trial here because we'd get a lot of attention. Their business comes to town. You know, it'd be a good thing for the town to have the trial here. So they went and talked to him and said, would you be willing? And he was actually reluctant.
I'll bet.
He had a summer job selling Fords, but they talked him into it, and he had it. He came from, his father was English,
mm-hmm.
and was actually a railway union guy, and so something of a free thinker. So he had kind of that background behind him, but mostly it was, you know, they kind of said, well, you know, would you be willing to do this? Even though he actually taught it as a substitute.
Right. He wasn't even a full-time teacher at the school. He was a substitute teacher. That's one of the other things I didn't. I learned, I must tell you, John Mark Hansen, I learned so much from your story, an astonishing amount. It worked. When we come back from a short commercial break, and I still am thinking of it as a public relations maneuver. I think there's some people who think of it simply as, oh, monkey trials and Spencer Tracy, and that's all they can remember. But it was a remarkable public relations clue for that town.
Oh, yes.
So we'll talk about that because, you know, there were 200 reporters there. H.L. Mencken covered it for the Baltimore Sun. We'll continue on. I'm going to keep him on for a while because I'm fascinated with this. It is the 100th anniversary. The trial lasted, remind me, 11 days? 10 11 days?
Days.
Yeah, 11 mm-hmm. days. Very few people listening know what happened in the trial. They're trying to remember the movie and where all their bases, and they're thinking to themselves, oh, wait, that guy Dick York who played Scopes, I don't even remember what his name was, in the film. Oh, he was married to that lady on Bewitched. That's probably what they're thinking. And learn more about the famous monkey trial by listening to me talk to University of Chicago professor, political science professor, but a wonderful, you're a very good writer, John Mark Hansen, and there's a piece in the University of Chicago magazine. You can go to mag.uchicago.edu and search for it because it's fascinating. It's a really interesting backstory to the famous trial that took place 100 years ago in Dayton, Ohio. You also do a wonderful, I had no idea that, first tell me how William Jennings Bryan, a multi-presidential candidate and the legendary defendant of the damned, Clarence Darrow, how did those, that's a huge reason that it generated the kind of public relations coup that it did. How did those two wind up getting involved, John?
Well, they both, they got involved in some ways because of each other. Darrow actually volunteered to be on the defense counsel. He volunteered his services through the American Civil Liberties Union for the trial. He'd never done that before. He'd never actually solicited or volunteered for business.
People, and he was, sorry to interrupt you, but he was, as you know, well know, that he was coming off the Leopold and Loeb trial, the trial of the century at that time.
Yes,
so he was as
before.
He was obviously as famous a lawyer as there was in the country. I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
Sure. So Darrow was a free thinker, and he had already tangled with Bryan over issues of the literal truth of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1923. Bryan had responded to something that had been published about him in the Chicago Tribune with a kind of long essay where he laid out his religious views, and Darrow took exception to them, and so he wrote back, and so there are 50 questions that he poses about the literal truth of the Bible to William Jennings Bryan on the front pages of Chicago Tribune in 1923.
Wow.
Many of which get recycled for his reexamination
of Bryan
in 1925. Bryan, after he was presidential candidate, he was Secretary of State under Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of refashioned himself as a defender of the Christian faith.
Yeah.
He's a Presbyterian. And right in that time, right before and right after World War I, there was this kind of great awakening. It was an evangelical period. Billy Sunday, who, of course, was a former Cubs player, was out there, railing against evolution, and so was Bryan. And so Bryan volunteered for the prosecution, to help the prosecution when the trial was announced, and so they both sort of wanted to sort of get their views out in front of the public in this way.
And one of the other things about Darrow, who lived in Hyde Park at sort of 60th, I think, near Stony Island, he used the university. I mean, he sort of recruited people from the University of Chicago to help him, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, he did. There was a big effort that went into recruiting expert witnesses for the defense. A lot of that was done out of New York, the ACLU offices in New York, and there were people that they arranged. But Darrow, for a number of years, actually going back probably 15 or 20 years, he was interested in lots of different things, and so he would have these salons in his home. And he was particularly interested in biology, of all things.
Yeah.
And so he had this biology group, and it got into issues of, biology and evolution and theology and all kinds of related issues, human origins and so forth. And so he had this set of people he'd been talking to for years about these issues, many of whom were University of Chicago faculty members. And so when he started looking for the kind of witnesses he felt like he needed. He had them on his Rolodex, so to speak, and he called them up.
And they were eager to participate, yes, I would think.
Yeah, yeah, they were. They were. One was a guy, Ron Grossman talks about him too, who had just joined the university faculty after being at the Field Museum, where he'd been responsible for the program in physical anthropology, which is the study of the hominid fossil record.
Mm-hmm.
Another was an embryologist here who had just written a source book on evolutionary theory. And then the third person was a guy named Shaler Matthews, who was the dean of the Divinity School at the time. He had just published a book on kind of the relationship between science and religion. And had specifically and was specifically on record, you know, basically saying there's no contradiction. There's no necessary contradiction between the account of creation in the Bible and the and evolutionary theory.
It is a fascinating. Do you like? I ask you. Do you like the movie? I mean, knowing what you know. And I'm thinking that you probably don't have any trouble with the movie sort of mangling and massaging facts. Do you or do you not?
Well, that's what fictionalized treatments do.
Yeah, right. There is no Superman. There really is no Superman. Yeah.
Right. And I haven't seen the movie since writing this piece or researching this piece, so I'm not sure I would have been offended by anything that was in it when I saw it before.
No, you seem like a good guy, and you do understand that whole thing. It was an absolute sensation, though, was it not? I mean, it was this story was carried in hundreds, when there were hundreds of newspapers across the country, and WGN did the first, you know, sort of remote national broadcast of this thing. Why? Because was the whole notion of science? I still think that science versus religion is an argument that goes on today.
Oh, yes. I'm from Kansas. They were just talking about this a few years ago.
Yeah. Let's interrupt the Darrow thing. When did you come to the University of Chicago? What drew you here?
Well, it was my first job out of graduate school.
Wow.
And it was, and what drew me to the University of Chicago from, you know, having other options in front of me was that this is a really, really interesting and stimulating place, and I've just never seen the like of it. So that's what brought me here.
And you've written a book also. I did not know that until researching some of this show. You've written a book. What's it called? City in a Garden. You didn't coin that phrase, but you've written that book, have you not?
Yes, that's a book on the history of Hyde Park and Kenwood, and it refers to the location of the park system, kind of right around Hyde Park.
I would also think you sort of would be taken with, I suppose, though it's not a dead, incredibly historically accurate, a book like Devil in the White City, probably is on your list of good books. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a very, very interesting book, and I've looked into it further, in particular to identify where all of the people who are listed in it as having participated in these crimes, where they lived, and you know where these events actually occurred.
Is there? And we'll go back again. My guest is John Mark Hansen of the University of Chicago, the great alma mater of my father. Who's a hero in this? And I hate to keep you in the John Scopes trial. Is there a hero in this whole thing?
Well, I think one could argue that Scopes himself is a hero.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about John Scopes was he's a pretty shy guy. He really didn't like the publicity that much. When it was over with, He had an opportunity to go back and teach again at Ray County High School, but he decided he didn't want to do that. But he also had, you know, these offers for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to go on the vaudeville stage and talk about his experiences. And he didn't want to do that.
Well, that's admirable, I'll tell you that. That's admirable as far as I'm concerned. But it's interesting that he is, to my mind, just by dint of where he was and what he did, an important historical figure. And I sort of admire him for that. Yeah, I just, and I don't know if you know much about this, but I just wrote a piece in Sunday's paper about Amelia Earhart, who spent one senior year of high school at Hyde Park High, and the guy she married, a guy named Putnam, and how he absolutely took unbelievable advantage of, and he is supposed to be one of the most obnoxious, unlikable people ever. He left his own wife to marry Amelia Earhart and promote the hell out of her. And many people believe was responsible for making her, hey, why don't you fly across the Pacific Ocean? So I see, even at that time, it's very hard, and I admire Scopes for turning down these many, many offers. Do you?
Oh, absolutely. He was very... He didn't try to capitalize on his celebrity. In fact, he really tried to kind of push the spotlight off of him.
Yeah.
One of the pieces of correspondence I got as a result of this was a letter from a guy who gave Scopes his job.
Oh, wow.
In the oil industry, where he worked for the rest of his career.
I'm grateful to my guest, John Mark Hansen, for spending so much time with me talking about and trying to straighten me out on the famous, famous, famous trial of a teacher named John Scopes. 100 years ago, in the so-called monkey trial, I will play later on in this half hour after I let John go back to sleep or whatever he wants to do. He's a fabulous guy and a great writer. This piece, Evolution on Trial, can be found at mag.uchicago.edu. It's a fascinating read with some lovely illustrations. We should tell people what happened in the trial. He was, if I'm not mistaken, Darrow asked the jury to find Scopes guilty so that he could appeal the case, yes?
Yes, that was the whole purpose of having the case.
Exactly.
He'd be found guilty, and therefore there'd be a basis for appeal.
Yep. And he was fined $100. He didn't pay that. And he led a kind of nondescript life after that. He did write, and I didn't know this, and I'm going to look it up and try to get it. He wrote a memoir later in life, did he not?
Yeah, it was co-authored. He had a writer working with him, but he did write a memoir later, which is actually a pretty good memoir.
Oh, you like you've of course you've read it and you like it. Does he? That's a small moment in his life, and I guess it takes up a large portion of the book. I'm wondering what convinced him to finally put it down on paper. And I wonder, John Mark Hansen, are there any, this 100th anniversary thing, I suppose people will be drawn to the movie and many to Ron Grossman's piece in the Chicago Tribune today, and to your fine piece in the University of Chicago magazine. Are there any lessons? I have the feeling this whole thing and what happened down there is sort of still echoes in the body politic today. Am I making too much of it?
Oh, no. I think both in the specific and in the general. In the specific, there are still controversies over the role of religion, in particular in public school classrooms.
Yeah.
Evolution is still part of that. We went through a long period where there were people who were trying to get creation science taught alongside evolutionary theory in public high schools. So that still happens, but you know, more broadly, the public schools themselves in a democratic system, there's always this issue of who controls what gets taught, and how much influence should people working through the democratic process, either elected officials or parents or activists, how much influence should they have over what the content of public education is, and that goes back and forth, and we're still seeing it. I mean, most immediately now with all the anti-DEI legislation that's started in the state legislatures and is now being advanced by the Trump administration.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing story. What, now that you've finished this piece, what is, I'm so intrigued by you. You were great talking about sort of the history of political conventions here. We had a great talk about that, and you're very knowledgeable about that. What is piquing your interest these days, John?
Well, I'm actually at work on a book on the history of the metallurgical laboratory here at the University of Chicago, which was the part of the Manhattan Project that occurred here at the university, the most famous part of which, or the part that everyone knows about, is the first self-sustained nuclear reaction in 1942. But there was more than that. In fact, the main game around here was actually plutonium. So I'm working on a kind of an organizational, social, community history, I guess,
interesting.
The metallurgical laboratory.
You said right after graduate school you came here because you were intrigued by the sort of deep history of Chicago. This is how long have you been teaching?
Oh gosh, I came here in the mid 1980s, so I'm getting up toward 40 years,
and
somewhere in the 30s.
Obviously, it has been rewarding for you, yes?
Oh yes, yeah. I've had an opportunity to do a lot of things here, both as a professor, but also in academic leadership. It's been a lot of fun.
And you live? I'm assuming you live in Hyde Park. Yes,
I do. I do. We live in a house. It's a pre-fire house, actually.
Really?
Built before the Chicago fire.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And what else have you enjoyed about Hyde Park? I mean, Hyde Park, to my mind, has changed radically in about the last 10 years, much of it due to the building of a certain structure down near the Museum of Science and Industry. Have you noticed that? You must have.
Well, certainly over the 35 years or so that I've been here, there's been a lot of change. But I think it still retains some really special features. One is it's like being in a college town that's in the middle of a big city. There's that aspect. And the other aspect I really enjoyed, particularly as a parent, was being in a community that is in a very, very diverse and in many ways challenged part of the city.
No question. Yeah.
So that my kids would actually, you know, learn that not everyone is so fortunate as they to live in the kind of circumstances we do.
Yeah. What are your children? How many children do you have?
Two. They're both lawyers.
Well, that's a mistake. How'd you let that happen?
Well, they got interested in it. They're both doing public interest, though. So.
Did they stay in Chicago?
One is here. She's doing immigration work.
Oh, good. Well, that's
the other's in Oklahoma City, and she's doing death penalty defense work.
Oh, wow. 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 Well, I got to meet you face-to-face one day and maybe have a drink or something at one of those nice old-fashioned Hyde Park bars. But you're a terribly bright guy, and you have enlightened me on two subjects, and we'll move on. Metallurgy being my next one. John Mark Hansen is, the title is fairly long, but he's explained who those people are. And how many classes do you teach? Week?
Well, I teach four courses over the course of a year.
Okay.
I'm on leave this year, though, so I'm not teaching until January again.
Well, once again, this piece in the University of Chicago magazine, mag.the letter U, Chicago chicagohistory.edu. Evolution on Trial is the title of the piece. John Mark Hansen is the author of the piece, and it's really something. It was 100 years ago that there's no air conditioning in that courthouse. No air conditioning at all. And
it was hot as blazes.
It was a wild time down there. Thanks so much for spending so much time, John. I really appreciate it. Look forward to meeting you one day.
Me too.